Pierre and His Family, A Story of the Waldenses and Their Suffering Under Persecution. Preface to the Pierre Family. We have the most perfect confidence in presenting the Pierre Family that it will be hailed with pleasure and read with profit. It is as nearly historical as the plan of the work would admit. Indeed, it may be said to be historically correct by applying the narrative to many families of the persecuted Waldenses instead of confining it to Pierre's. The little volume has many fresh and fascinating tints thrown around the stern and melancholy truths it contains of the sufferings of one of the most interesting portions of the Christian Church, which for many ages previously to the Reformation of Luther protested against the Church of Rome and held the true and sufficient Christian faith. In order to assist the youthful reader and the well-grown and even aged may read it with equal pleasure, we shall insert a notice of the Waldenses from Watson's Biblical and Theological Dictionary. Waldenses, Wallenses, or Albigenses, the Vaudois, or inhabitants of the beautiful valleys of the Alps, between Italy and Provence. Many have supposed that they derive their name from Peter Waldo, or Valdo, a merchant of Lyons in the 12th century and one of their leaders and patrons. But their history has been traced considerably further back, which has led others to suppose that, on the contrary, he derived his name from them, as Peter the Waldensian, or Peter of the Valleys. The learned Dr. Alex, in his History of the Churches of Piedmont, gives this account. For 300 years or more, the Bishop of Rome attempted to subjugate the Church of Milan under his jurisdiction. And at last, the interest of Rome grew too potent for the Church of Milan, planted by one of the disciples, insomuch that the bishop and the people, rather than own their jurisdiction, retired to the valleys of Lucerne and Angrone, and thence were called Valenses, Wallenses, or the people of the valleys. Forbearing this noble testimony against the Church of Rome, these pious people were for many centuries the subjects of a most cruel persecution. And in the 13th century, the Pope instituted a crusade against them, and they were pursued with a fury perfectly diabolical. Their principles, however, continued unsubdued, and at the Reformation their descendants were reckoned among the Protestants, with whom they were in doctrine so congenial. But in the 17th century the flames of persecution were again rekindled against them by the cruelty of Louis the 14th. At the revocation of the Edict of Nantes, about 15,000 perished in the prisons of Pignerol, beside great numbers who perished among the mountains. They received, however, the powerful protection and support of England under William III. But still, the House of Saxony continued to treat them as heretics, and they were oppressed by a variety of cruel edicts. When Piedmont was subjected to France in 1800, the French government, Bonaparte being first consul, placed them on the same plan of toleration with the rest of France. But on the return of the King of Sardinia to Genoa, Notwithstanding the intercession of Lord Lilium Bentinck, the old persecuting edicts were revived in the end of 1814, and though they have not been subjected to fire and faggot as aforetime, their worship has been restrained, and they were not only stripped of all employments, but by a most providential circumstance only saved from a general massacre. Since then, they have been visited by some pious and benevolent Englishmen, and the number of Waldenses or Vaudios has been taken at 19,710, beside about 50 families residing at Turin. Editors, New York, November 1832. Introduction. During the Dark Ages, which succeeded the invasion of Europe by the barbarous nations, when feudal anarchy distracted the civil governments, and a flood of superstition had deluged the church, Christianity, banished from the seats of empire and loathing the monkish abodes of indolence and vice, meekly retired into the sequestered valleys of Piedmont. Finding there a race of men unarrayed in hostile armor, uncontaminated by the doctrines and commandments of an apostate church, unambitious in their temper and simple in their manners, she preferred their society and took up her abode. This beautiful passage from the elegant and eloquent historian of the churches of the Waldenses suggested the idea of the following story, in which an attempt is made to sketch the peace, industry, and home-felt happiness of a family in one of the villages of the valleys, and then very simply to exhibit the nature of the persecution to which, from generation to generation, the people of God have been exposed in almost every Catholic state of Europe. It is, however, well known to every reader of history that many Catholics in every age have exceedingly disapproved of the measures followed by the priesthood in regard to the Waldenses, Albigenses, and other Protestant churches, and the singular note which is quoted at the end of this volume shows how strong and how generous was the sympathy felt by many a noble and by more than one royal Catholic for the wrongs and sufferings of the early Christians of the valleys. For the information of my readers, it may be necessary to state that Piedmont, the place to which Christianity is said to have withdrawn, is a tract of country situated at the foot of the Alps, an immense range of mountains which divides Italy from France, Switzerland, and other countries. It consists of a number of beautiful valleys, embosomed in mountains, which are again encircled by other mountains, and displays in its varied scenery in most striking contrast all the fertility and beauty of Eden, with lakes of ice and mountains covered with eternal snow. Many of the passes leading into Piedmont are strongly fortified, not by art, but by nature, which has so multiplied her bulwarks of rocks and rivers, forests and precipices, that it appears, says Sir Thomas Morland, as if the all-wise Creator had from the beginning designed that place as a cabinet wherein to put some inestimable jewel, or in which to reserve many thousand souls who should not bow the knee to Baal. But Christianity was not always secure amid the valleys of the Alps. She had sometimes to escape for her life, to leave the valleys behind her, to cross the mountains in ice and snow, and to seek shelter in Dauphiny, in Provence, and even in the recesses of the Pyrenees. There also beautiful valleys are to be found, rich in everything that is sweet to the taste or pleasant to the eye, adorned with the flowers and fruit of the citron and the orange, the aloe and the pomegranate, animated by herds of deer and cheered by the song of the vintage. Behold, then, in these valleys, the retreats of a most interesting people, who in times of misrule and oppression in the state, and of bigotry and superstition in the church, preserved in simplicity and impurity the faith once delivered to the saints. Men that continued from race to race, a separate people like the Hebrew fathers of old, who went from one nation to another and from one kingdom to another people, so the Christians of these early ages hunted as partridges on the mountains and stigmatized as heretics by their enemies, when persecuted in one city, fled to another, and when dislodged from the shelter of one lovely valley, retreated to the sequestered bosom of some other. These interesting and persecuted people were called Waldenses. It is thought by some that the reason why they were so called was from the Latin word vallis, from which the English word valley and the ecclesiastical word Waldenses are both derived. The latter simply signifies the inhabitants of valleys. The Waldenses were exceedingly hated by the monks and clergy of the Church of Rome, who called them heretics. Their heresy consisted in the belief of the truth, as set forth in the Bible, and in their contempt of many ceremonies and practices of the Roman Catholics. Among other things, the Waldenses affirmed that the Mass signified nothing, that the apostles knew nothing about it, that whatever was preached without scripture proof was no better than fables, and they would neither kiss the altar, the priest's hands, nor the pope's feet. They placed no value in absolution, saying none could forgive sins but God only. They gave no credit to the legends of the saints, and despised alike their mock miracles and their relics. They dreaded all dedications and benediction of candles, ashes, oil, fire, salt, water. They said that Christ never gave to his disciples either rockets or mitres. They dissuaded people from going on pilgrimage, and they denied the existence of purgatory, saying, "Where the tree falls, there it lies." They considered once praying in the words and spirit of the Lord's Prayer better than the ringing of 10 bells or than the Mass itself. They declared they saw no efficacy in the priestly vestments, altars, ornaments, palls, corporals, chalices, and patens. The worship of images and their presence in the churches they affirmed to be idolatrous. But the very head and front of their offending was this: they could say great part of the Bible by heart. But while such were the sentiments held and expressed by the people of the valleys, and which must have been extremely offensive to the Catholics, it is but justice to both parties to state that the Catholic historians of that day bear ample testimony to the excellence of the morality of these persecuted heretics, except in some instances where their accusations are so absurd and so extravagant as to carry with them their own contradiction. "These heretics," writes an inquisitor of that age, "these heretics are known by their manners and conversation, for they are orderly and modest in their behavior and deportment. They avoid all appearance of pride in their dress. They are chaste, temperate, and sober. They seek not to amass riches. They abstain from anger, and even while at work are either learning or teaching. A Catholic prelate says of them, "Their heresy accepted, they generally live a purer life than other Christians. In their morals and lives they are perfect, irreprehensible, without reproach among men." "They are true in words," says another inquisitor, "unanimous in brotherly love, but their faith is incorrigible and vile, as I have shown in my treatise." This faith, however, which the Dominican anathemized as incorrigible and vile, was notwithstanding his assertion both divine and holy, the faith that purifieth the heart, worketh by love, and overcometh the world. The faith of the martyrs and confessors of the primitive church, the faith that supported the first martyr, who in the exquisite agonies of an excruciating death went as it were to sleep in peace and stillness amid all the tumult of his persecutors, saying, "Lord Jesus, receive my spirit." One circumstance more might be added to this sketch of the character of these depositories of truth, these lights of the world in the days of darkness. I mean the zeal with which, as the missionaries of their age, they sought to instruct the uninformed, and the simplicity with which they communicated to others their knowledge of that Bible which was withheld from the Roman Catholic laity, and of which many of the clergy knew nothing. But as the following story is intended to convey this information to the juvenile reader, and to interest him in the truths of that Bible which the Waldenses in some measure preserve, and through God's blessings have handed down to us, I shall not here anticipate what follows, but cast myself upon the generosity of my readers, praying that this little book may not pass through their hands without a blessing from Him who can alone make any means of instruction profitable, but who is sometimes pleased to magnify His own omnipotence by the very weakness and feebleness of the instrument which He employs.